smoke was out for no more than a few seconds, never really losing full consciousness. He felt blood dripping down the side of his face. He was still holding onto his guns, and he remembered they were full. Dozens of shapes began materializing around him in the night, steeling himself for action. If he was going down this night, he was going to take as many people as he could with him. Naked shapes burst from the timber, firing rifles and pistols. Men fell in twos and threes, riddled by countless holes. In a matter of seconds, would have been 20 outlaws with no more than dying cooling flesh in the still warm mountain air slightly above Dead River. The Utes vanished back into the timber, taking their fallen brother with them. Smoke reloaded his guns, pistols, and rifles, and slung the rifles across his shoulders. He wrapped his bandana around his head and tied it after inspecting his head wound with his fingers and finding it not serious. He knew that a head wound can bleed hard and fast for a few moments and then in many cases just stop. He then began making his way down the hill back into the town of Dead River. He was going to take the fight to the outlaws. He stopped just once to tie a white handkerchief around his arm. So not only the Indians would know who he was, but so the posse members would not mistakenly shoot him. He slipped down to the building where an outlaw was hanging half out of the window, quietly checked out the interior. The building was void of life. Looking up the street, he could see where he, York, and the Utes had taken a terrible toll on the population of the outlaw town. The streets, alleys, and boardwalks were littered with bodies. Most were not moving. He didn't know how much time had transpired since he and the ranger had opened the dance, but he was sure it was a good half hour to 45 minutes. He slipped to the south a few yards and found a good defensible position behind a stone wall that somebody had built around a small garden. Smoke surveyed the street, picking out likely targets. He unslung the rifles, laid his sack of guns and cartridges by one side, the express guns by his other side, and then picked up and checked out a Henry. He had found a man stationed on top of a building. Sighting him in now, Smoke let the other outlaws know he was still in the game. Putting his hand to the ground, Smoke thought he could detect a tremble.
Is that?
He pressed his ear to the ground.
Posse's no more than a mile away.
York! Yo! Smoke!
Here they come, Ranger! Shovel the coals to it!
Smoke began levering and pulling the trigger, laying down a blistering line of fire into the buildings of the town. From his position at the other end of town, York did the same. The Utes opened up from both sides of the town, and the night rocked with gunfire.
Oh, for the love of God!
Sheriff Larson's eyes were utterly disbelieving as they surveyed each tortured man and woman on the outskirts of town. They were twitching, flies buzzing around their faces. The posse of hardened Western men, accustomed to savage sights, had never seen anything like this.
You three men, stay here and cut these wretches down. Do what you can for them.
Jim, it's Smoke Jensen. Hold your fire, I'm coming over.
Smoke zigzagged over to the posse, catching the reins of a horse as the man dismounted.
Your horse is looking good shape.
We rested him about a mile back, let him blow good and gave him half a hat full of water. Whoa, Smoke.
What?
Your head. You okay?
Oh, Sally's hit me harder. You got a horse for me?
Oh, yeah. Take that one. Some of our men are going to take these poor souls and do what they can for them.
Yeah. There were some bad men that did this.
Well, I got you to thank for getting us off our butts and shutting this place down. You got any inside information as to what to expect in there?
Nah. If it moves, shoot it. There's an Arizona Ranger named York up yonder. He's a damn good man. Don't kill him.
What about the Ute? Is that the rest of the war I'm hearing?
Yeah. But you ain't ever gonna see him unless they want you to.
Good to know.
Yep. Well, good luck to you, boys.
All right, man. Let's go.
The reins in their teeth and their hands full of 44s and 45s, posse hit the main street hard. Yep. Smoke dismounted, ground reining the horse. Thought he saw some movement.
Jensen! Move, Jensen!
Smoke stepped behind the corner of the building.
Yeah?
Cat Ventura here! You played hell, Jensen!
That's what I came here to do, Ventura.
Step out and face me, Jensen!
No thanks, Ventura. I don't trust you.
As soon as he said it, Smoke dropped to the ground. Smoke came up on one knee and let the hammers fall on both barrels of the sawed-off shotgun.
God damn you, Jensen!
Smoke slipped out of the alley and looked at the scene. Several men were lying in the dirt, their blood mixing together. Smoke looked down at what was left of Cat Ventura. The full load of buckshot had taken him in the chest and throat. It wasn't pretty. Then, Cat hadn't been very pretty when he was alive, either. Smoke thought of those poor people at the edge of town. Could not drudge up one goddamn ounce of sympathy for the outlaws who just blasted to hell. He stepped over the gore and continued walking up the back alley. The posse had dismounted and were taking the town building by building, but the outlaws remaining were showing no inclination to give up the fight. Smoke caught a glimpse of several men slipping up the alley toward him. He eased back the hammers of the express gun and stepped deeper into the shadows, a privy to his left. Smoke recognized the lead man as an outlaw called Brawley, a man who had been in trouble with the law and society in general since practically the moment of birth. Smoke stepped out of the shadows and pulled both triggers.
The goddamn engine's got cahooned! It's every man for himself!
At a gap between buildings, Smoke could see York still in position, still spitting out lead from his hand. The bodies in the street paid mute testimony to the Ranger's deadly aim. A man wearing a white armband ducked into the gap and spotted Smoke.
Easy! Smoke Jensen here.
Smoke could see the badge on his chest, marking him as a U.S. Marshal.
Wind it down. Thought I'd take me a breather. You and that Arizona Ranger played hell, Smoke.
That was our intention. You got the makings? Lost my sack.
The man tossed Smoke a bag of tobacco and papers. Squatting down out of the line of fire, Smoke and Marshall rolled, licked, and lit.
Got hit?
Yeah, a couple of times. Nothing some hard whiskey and a doctor can't fix come morning.
I figured the big boys got loose free. That's Davison's big house up yonder on the ridge. Hey!
Oh, it's me, Jim! Oh, confound it, Jensen. The devil himself couldn't beat you to a draw.
I dearly wish you would announce your intentions, old boss. Your nearabouts got drilled.
Give me the makings, Glenn. I lost my pouch.
Yep.
Rex Davis's house is far up on that hill. I was up there every day this week. Judging by the way the mountains are situated, I'd imagine he's got his very own private way out. Him and his best buddies probably rode right out of here as soon as the first shot was fired.
Thanks, Glenn. Well, let's us rest for a minute, and then we'll take us a hike up yonder to the house. Check it out. Now, I've arranged for a judge to be here at first light. The hands from Red Davis's place is going to act as jury. Red will be jury foreman. Soon as we clean out the general store, I got some boys ready to start working on ropes.
Ezekiel Jones, the judge?
Yep.
Gonna be some short trials.
Yep.
And there's gonna be a bunch of newspaper folks and photographers here, too.
Yep.
You ain't gonna take Jeff Robeson alive! I'm gonna pump you off!
Glenn looked at the body of the outlaw, pumped full of lead from every direction.
I'm thinking there might not be all that many to be tried.
Yep.
The battle for the outlaw town of Dead River was winding down sharply as Smoke and the Marshals made their way up the hill to Rex Davidson's fine home. They passed a half dozen bodies on the curving path, all outlaws. All three men were conscious of eyes on them as they walked up the stone path. It was Utes waiting in the darkness, watching.
Who in the world?
Cahoon.
Whatever he gets, he earned.
How long's it been, Jim?
It's 10 o'clock right now.
That long, huh? You hear that?
I don't hear anything.
Exactly. No gunfire.
Yeah, I noticed it too. Eerie, ain't it?
The men walked on, stepping onto the porch of the house. Motioning the lawman away from the front door in case it was booby-trapped, Smoke stepped to one side and eased it open. Smoke was the first in, the express gun ready. Jim and Glenn came in behind him, their hands full of pistols. But the caution had been unnecessary. The room was void of human life. The men split up, each taking a room. In a few minutes, they all came back.
Find out what happened?
Nobody's anywhere in the whole house. But there's a lot of signs they got out quick.
Yeah, I saw their big safe is wide open. I also found some papers.
What's on the sheets?
Wanted posters and other information on the men who lived here. More than enough to match up men to their crimes come morning. How about you, Jensen?
No people, but I was right. At the back of the house, I found a trap door. The house was built in front of a cave opening. They're long gone.
Don't sell yourself short. What we've done, it was mostly you and York, is clean out a nest of snakes. We made this part of the country a hell of a lot safer.
On the way back to town, Smoke spotted the Ute chief, White Wolf. The men stopped.
Howdy, White Wolf. We're going to try them that's still alive in the morning. We should be out of the town by late tomorrow afternoon. When we pull out, the town and everything in it is yours.
I thank you. My people will not be cold or hungry this winter.
White Wolf turned to Smoke.
My brother, Preacher, would be proud of you. I will see that he hears of this fight, young warrior.
Thank you, Chief. Give him my best.
White Wolf nodded, shook hands with the men, and then was gone. It was a sullen lot that were rounded up and herded into the compound for safekeeping. A head count showed 50 hard cases had elected to surrender or were taken by force, usually the latter. But as Smoke Jensen had feared, many of the worst ones had slipped out. Shorty, Red, and Jake were gone. Bill Wilson's body had been found, but Studs Woodenhouse, Ty Medley, Paul Rycroft, and Slim Bothwell were also missing. Hart and Ayers were dead, riddled with bullets. But Natick, Nappy, LaHogue, and Brute Pittman had managed to escape. Tustin couldn't be found among the dead, so all had to assume the so-called minister had also made it out alive. Sheriff Danvers had been taken prisoner. Daggett, Glenn Moore, Lapeer, and of course Rex Davidson were gone. Smoke knew he would have them to deal with sooner or later, and probably sooner. But now, he and York needed to catch a few hours' sleep before the judge and his jury showed up. They would be in Dead River at dawn. As had been predicted, there were several newspaper men with the judge, as well as several photographers. The bodies of the outlaws still lay in the street at dawn when the judge, jury, reporters, and photographers showed up. Two of the half-dozen reporters were from New York City and Boston on a tour of the Wild West, and they were appalled at the sight that greeted them. Old Red Davis, obviously enjoying putting the needle to the Easterners, showed them around the town, pointing out any sight they might have missed.
Oh, and you see that fella over yonder? The man with the gold badge on his chest? That's the most famous gunfighter in all the West. He's killed 200 to 300 men, not counting Injuns. That's Smoke Jensen, boy.
Why's the man wearing a badge? He's an outlaw.
No, he ain't no such thing. He's just fast with a gun, that's all. The fastest man alive. And all sorts of books read about Smoke. Want to meet him?
Do I? You bet.
come on.
Hello, Mr. Jensen. Hey, Mr. Jensen, just a few words for the folks back home.
Now, you boys from back east walk light around the men in this town. This ain't Boston or New York. And while Smoke is a right nice fella with a fine ranch up north of here, he can be a mite touchy at times. Now, let me tell you just what happened here on the record.
Oh, I'd be much obliged.
Now, we'd best start at the beginning. Smoke Jensen's wife was hunted down and shot in cold blood. Now, not only did she pull through, but she got the names of the people who did it to her. Smoke's been hunting them down and traced them back to this town, Dead River. Dead River is, or should I say
the photographer set up his awkward equipment and was taking pictures of Smoke and the Arizona Ranger, York. Both men endured it.
You got any warrants on any of them that cut and run?
Sure do. What you got in mind?
I think Sally told me she was going to give birth about October. I plan on being there when she does.
That gives us a few months to prowl. Tell your bosses back in Arizona not to worry any about the expenses. It's on me.
Marshal Jim Wilde, unintentionally, gave the newspaper reporters the fuel that would in time ignite the biggest gunfight Western style in Keene, New Hampshire history.
No more, and the whole of the West is a whole lot safer. Unfortunately, the men who attacked Smoke's wife are still on the dodge, hiding out somewhere. And as for Smoke's wife, she's back in New Hampshire. He'll be going back there when she gives birth to their child. Now come on, I'll introduce you gentlemen to Smoke Jensen.
Judge Hezekiah Jones had set up his bench, so to speak, outside the saloon, with the jury seated to his left on the boardwalk. Already a gallows had been knocked together and ropes noosed and knotted. They could hang three at a time.
Bill Henry, Jeremiah Harrison, Donald Catlin. How does the jury find these men?
Guilty, Your Honor.
Hang them.
Ugh. Frontier justice certainly does leave a great deal to be desired.
Sheriff Danvers stood before the bench, his hands tied behind his back.
I have a statement to make, Your Honor.
Oh, all right, make your goddamn statement and then plead guilty, you heathen.
I ain't guilty.
How does the jury find Sheriff Danvers?
Guilty.
Hang the son of a bitch.
And so it went. The hurdy-gurdy ladies and shopkeepers were hauled off in wagons. Smoke didn't ask where they were being taken, because he really didn't care. The bodies of the outlaws would be carried out of town and tossed into a huge pit.
Jim?
Yes, Jensen?
I'd like to keep my federal commission if it's no trouble to you. I got a hunch this mess isn't over.
Keep it as long as you like. You're making $30 a month and expenses. You want me to wire your wife?
I'm sure she'd be mighty pleased if you did.
I'll let her know you're done here and you're doing just fine.
Thanks. But I feel like she's going to hear about it sooner or later anyway, with all the East Coast reporters in town.
True, but it's always best to hear from the source. York, I'll pass a wire to the Arizona Rangers, too.
Thanks, Marshal.
Good working with you, Smoke. York, I'll ride any trail with you boys anytime.
Sally, have you seen the papers? Look!
I've seen them, Father. Smoke's fine. I got his wire yesterday.
It's not your husband I'm worried about. Look at this! Justice at Dead River. Justice! According to this story, almost 50 men were hanged in one morning. Their trials took an average of 3 minutes per man. That's justice? For God's sake, Sally. Surely you don't agree with these kangaroo proceedings.
Father, it's a hard land. We don't have the time for all the niceties you people take for granted back here.
It doesn't bother you that your husband, Smoke, is credited, if that's the right choice of words, with killing some 30 or 40 men?
No, I don't see why it should. You see, Father, you've taken a defense attorney's position already, and you immediately condemn Smoke and the other lawmen and posse members, without ever saying a word about those poor people who were kidnapped, enslaved, and then hung up on hooks to die by slow torture. You haven't said a word about the people those outlaws abused, robbed, murdered, raped, tortured, and then ran back to Dead River to hide and spin their ill-gotten gain. Even those papers there admit that every man who was hanged was a confessed murderer, many of them multiple killers. They got what they deserved, Father. No more and no less.
Well, the West has changed you, Sally. I don't know you anymore.
Yes, I've changed, Father. For the better. It's going to be very interesting when you and Smoke meet.
Yes, quite.
Smoke and York cut across the Sangre de Cristo range in search of the cave Davidson and his men had used to escape. Smoke had left his pack horse with the marshal's posse. He no longer had any need of his many art supplies. It took Smoke and York 3 days after crossing the high range to find the cave opening and the little valley beneath it.
Slick! If they hadn't knocked down the bushes growing in front of the mouth of that cave, we'd have had the devil's own hard time finding it.
The men entered the cave opening, which was barely large enough to accommodate a standing man. And they knew from the smell that greeted them what they would find. They looked down at the bloated and maggot-covered bodies on the cave floor.
You know them?
I see them in town, but I never knowed their names. And I don't feel like going through their pockets to find out who they are. Do you?
Not so much, no.
Both men stepped back outside, grateful to once more be out in the cool, fresh air.
I'll see if I can pick up a trail.
Old Preacher had schooled Smoke well. The man could track a snake across a flat rock. Smoke circled a couple of times, then came back to their horses.
Well?
North. I didn't think they'd risk getting out into the sand dunes. They'll probably follow the timber line until they get close to the San Luis. Then they'll ride the river, trying to hide their tracks. I'll make a bet they'll cut through Poncha Pass, then head east to the railroad town. They might stop at the hot springs first. You game?
Let's do it.
They picked up and lost the tracks a dozen times, but it soon became apparent that Smoke had pegged their direction accurately. A village called Salida was right in front of them. Salida was new and raw, a railroad town built by the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad. It was the division point of the main line and the narrow gauge lines over what is called Marshall Pass. They decided to stop there for information.
Yeah, I seen him. Rex Davidson, you said?
Just like on the poster, yeah. Him and his whole posse.
Yeah, they stopped by here, bought supplies and ammunition, and left the same day they'd come, except...
We're marshals, sir. I suggest you tell us everything you know.
Right. One man didn't ride out with the others.
He's still in town?
Sure is. Made his camp up by the Arkansas, about 3 miles out of town. But he's over to the saloon now.
What's this old boy look like?
Oh, about 30 or so. Short, barrel-chested, kind of messed up face.
Messed up? Like how?
Oh, pockmarked. Like his face got caught on fire and someone put it out with an ice pick.
That's nappy, all right. You got papers on him?
Indeed I do.
I'll back you up. Let's go. I know Nappy is wanted for rape and murder. What else did he do?
Killed my older brother, down between the Mogollon Plateau and the Little Colorado. Jimmy was a lawman, working out of Tucson. Nappy killed an old couple just outside of town, and Jimmy had tracked him north. Nappy ambushed him, gut shot my brother, and left him to die. But Jimmy went about to die before he told who done him in. He crawled for miles until some punchers found him. He could tell them what happened. Then he died. I was 15 at the time. I joined the Rangers when I was 18. Now it's 6 years ago.
You 24? I figured you for some younger than that.
Yeah, it's all that clean living I done.
Here we are. You ready?
Always, Smoke.
Nappy was not alone. The short, barrel-chested, and extremely ugly outlaw stood at the far end of the bar, his hands at his sides. To Smoke's extreme right, almost in the shadows, was another man, also standing.
Napoleon Whitman?
That's me, punk.
I'm an Arizona Ranger. It is my duty to inform you that you are under arrest for the murder of Tucson Deputy Sheriff Jimmy York.
Do tell. Well, Ranger, this is Colorado. You ain't jack shit up here.
I've also been appointed a deputy U.S. Marshal, Nappy. Now how's it gonna be?
The men at the tables drifted back out of the line of fire. And since Nappy had men posted all around the room, that meant getting clear outside, which is what most of them did.
Well, I think I'm gonna finish my drink, Ranger. That's what I think I'm gonna do. And since both you squirts is about to die, why don't y'all order yourselves a shot?
Nappy turned his left side to York and faced the bar. But both Smoke and York knew he was watching him in the mirror.
He's all yours. Don't worry about the others.
I don't drink with scum, Nappy.
What'd you say to me, punk?
I said you're scum, Nappy. You're what's found at the bottom of an outhouse pit.
All were conscious of many faces peering inside the dark bar room. Many men pressed up against the glass from the boardwalk.
You can't talk to me like that.
I just did, Nappy.
Then fill your hand, you son of a bitch!
Smoke had been standing, half turned away from York, about 3 feet between them, his arms folded across his lower chest. As Nappy grabbed for iron, Smoke went into a low crouch and cross-drew. Nappy beat York to the draw, but as so often happens, his first slug tore up the floor in front of York's boot. York didn't miss. Meanwhile, Smoke took out two others, then turned to the one man he faced who was still standing, shocked at how fast everything had gone down. One of the shot men leaned against the wall, blood all over his shirt front, trying to level his .45. A bullet to the face brought him down for good. As the roaring left his ears, Smoke saw that Nappy was still standing, even though York had emptied his .44s into the man's chest and belly. But Smoke could also see he was not going to be standing much longer. The man's eyes were glazing over and blood was pouring out of his mouth. His guns were laying on the floor beside his scuffed and dirty boots.
That you, Jensen?
It's me, Nappy.
Come closer, Jensen. I can't see you. Dark in here, ain't it?
What do you want, Nappy?
They'll get you, Jensen. They're gonna have their way with your uppity wife in front of your eyes. Then they're gonna kill you slow. You ain't gonna find them, Jensen. They're dug in deep. But they'll find you. And that's a promise, Jensen.
I'll send a wire to the Tucson office and tell them to recall the Dodgers on Nappy. You hit anywhere?
Nope. You?
Maybe a splinter. I'll be back, and then we'll have us a drink.
Sounds good. I'll have one while I'm waiting. Hurry up. I hate to drink alone.
Smoke lost the trail. It wasn't the first time it had happened in his life, but it irked the hell out of him all the same. Smoke and York trailed the outlaws to just outside of Crested Butte, and there they seemed to just drop off the face of the earth. The lawmen backtracked and circled, but it was no use. And after 5 more days of fruitless and frustrating looking, they decided to give it up. They were camped near the banks of Roaring Fork, cooking some fish they'd caught for supper, both their mouths salivating at the good smells, when Drifter's head and ears came up.
We got company.
So I noticed. Injuns, you reckon?
I don't think so. Drifter acts different when it's Indians.
Hello to fire!
If you're friendly, come on in. We caught plenty of fish and the coffee's hot.
A man stepped into camp, leading a saddle mount and a pack horse.
Oh, music to my ears, boys. Name's McGraw, but I'm called Shaw.
That's Buddy York, and I'm Smoke Jensen.
Damn if it ain't you. I figured you for some older. But there you sit, bigger than life. Just read about you in a paper traveling drummer gimme. Let me get it for you. Ain't but a week old, out of Denver. Here, see?
The paper told the story of the big shootout and the hangings and the final destruction of the outlaw town of Dead River. It told all about Smoke and York, and then, with a sinking feeling in the pit of his stomach, Smoke read about Sally being back in Keene, New Hampshire, awaiting the birth of their first child.
Partner? Something wrong?
Nothing.
York read the long article and lifted his eyes to Smoke. The men exchanged knowing glances across the fire and the broiling fish.
Help yourself, Chaw. We have plenty.
I want to wash up my hands before I partake. Be right back. Damn, boys, but that do smell good.
As soon as Chaw was out of earshot, Smoke leaned in towards York.
You ever been east to the Big Muddy, York?
Never had no desire to go. Until now, that is.
Davidson is crazy, but like a fox. We destroyed his little kingdom, brought his evil down on his head. And now he hates you as much as he does me. And I would just imagine this story is all over the West. It would be just like King Rex to gather up as many hard cases as he could buy. And he's got the money to buy a trainload of them and head east. What do you think?
I think you pegged it. Remember what Nappy said back at the bar just before he died?
Yeah. I'm betting he wants the child to be born before he does anything. It would be just like him. What do you think?
That you're right. All the way down the line. Daggett was one of them men who shot your wife, right?
Yeah.
But she wasn't showing a child then, right?
Right.
Well, Rex can count. He'll time it so the baby will be born, I'm thinking.
I think you're right. And I'm thinking none of them would want to get back east too soon. Daggett is wanted back there, remember? You with me, York?
All the way, Smoke.
We'll pull out in the morning. Here comes Chaw. We better fix some more fish. He looks like he could eat a skunk, and probably has.
The next morning, they said their goodbyes to Chaw and headed east, taking their time, heading for Leadville, once called Magic City and Cloud City, for it lies just below timberline, almost 2 miles above sea level. Some have described the climate as 10 months winter and 2 months damn late in the fall. Smoke and York followed old engine trails, trails that took Smoke back in time when he and Preacher roamed wild and free across the land, with Preacher teaching first the boy and then the man called Smoke. It brought back memories to Smoke, memories that unashamedly wet his eyes. If York noticed, and Smoke was sure he did, the ranger said nothing about it. Located in the valley of the Arkansas, Leadville was once the state's second largest city. It was first a roaring gold town, then a fabulous silver boom town, and then once more gold rush town. When Smoke and York rode into Leadville late one afternoon, the town was still roaring. Smoke and York had experienced no trouble on their way into the boom town, unlike so many other not-so-lucky travelers. Roving gangs of thugs and outlaws had erected toll booths on several of the most important roads leading into the town, and those who refused to pay were robbed at gunpoint. Many were killed. Robberies, rapes, assaults, and wild shootouts were almost an hourly occurrence within the town's limits. When Smoke and York rode into the busy city, Leadville's population was hovering between 50,000 and 60,000. No one ever really knew for sure. It was the wildest place in the state for the time. The town's only hospital was guarded by 100 men day and night to keep it from being torn down by thugs. Churches were forced to hire armed guards to work around the clock. A handful of police officers were virtually powerless to keep any semblance of order, so that fell to various vigilante groups. It was a town where you took your life in your hands just by getting out of bed in the morning.
I ain't too thrilled about no hotel, Smoke.
There wouldn't be a room anyway. We'll stable the horses, pick up some supplies, and hit the saloons. We might be able to hear something. Let's take off these badges.
The only hotel in town that might have had empty beds was the Mammoth Palace, a huge shed with double bunks that could easily sleep 500. A guest paid $1 for an 8-hour sleep in turn. Smoke and York turned their horses onto State Street, where several famous New York chefs operated fancy eating places. Oxtail soup cost 5 cents a bowl at Smoothies, and it was famous from the coast to the Rockies. Smoke waved at a ragged newsboy and bought a local newspaper, the Chronicle. They rode on and found a stable that had stalls to spare.
Howdy, boys. You staying long?
Nope, just for the night. And we'll sleep with our horses if that's all right with you.
No problem. That'll be $1 extra, boys. A piece.
$1 more?
York noted the look on Smoke's face and held his peace.
Give them a bait of corn and all the hay they can handle. Do it now. Because if you go into Drifter's stall after I'm gone, he'll kill you.
Son of a bitch tries to stomp me, I'll take a rifle to him.
Then I'll kill you.
Livery man looked into those cold, hard eyes.
I was joking, mister.
I wasn't.
Yes, sir. I'll take the best care of your horses. Whatever you say, Mr.
Smoke Jensen.
Oh, Lord God. Yes, sir, Mr. Jensen. Whatever you say, sir.
We'll get along fine, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. You can bet on that.
Smoke and York stepped out into the hustle and confusion of the boom town. Both knew that within the hour, every resident of the town would know that Smoke Jensen had arrived.
We can cover more ground if we split up. I'll take the other side of the street. What say we meet back at the stable in a couple hours?
Sounds good to me. Watch your back, York.
I hear you.
York checked the busy street, found his chance, and darted across. Smoke walked on. There was something about the tall man with the two guns and cross-draw fashion that made most men hurry to step out of his way. Smoke turned a corner and found himself on Harrison Avenue, a busy business thoroughfare. He strolled the avenue, left it, and turned several corners, cutting down to hit State and Main. There, he saw Natick stepping out of a brothel. Smoke stopped and half-turned, blending in better with the crowd. He backed against a building and began reading the paper he'd bought, still keeping a good eye on Natick. He hoped the outlaw might lead him to Davidson and Daggett. But Natick stepped out into the street and walked toward a saloon. Smoke turned away and walked in the opposite direction, not wanting to stare too long at the man, knowing how that can attract someone's attention. Smoke lounged around a bit, buying a cup of coffee and a sandwich at prices that would make a Scotsman squall in outrage. The coffee was weak and the sandwich uneatable. Smoke gave both to a ragged man who seemed down on his luck, and then he waited. Soon, he saw York walking up the street and turning into the saloon. Smoke hurriedly crossed the street and stepped into the crowded saloon himself. He elbowed and shouldered his way through the crowd. Several turned to protest, looking into the unforgiving eyes of the tall stranger with the two six guns, and they closed their mouths much faster than they had opened. York was facing Natick and two other hard-looking men that Smoke didn't know and did not remember seeing in Dead River. The crowd was rapidly moving back and away out of the line of fire. It was almost a repeat performance of Nappy and his crew, except that this time a photographer was there and had his equipment set up, and he was ready whenever the action began. The town marshal, a notorious bully and killer, was leaning up against the bar watching it all, a faint smile on his face. He was not going to interfere on behalf of either side.
Mort.
The marshal turned and faced Smoke, and his face went a shade paler.
Either choose a side or get out.
It was a warning and a challenge that rankled the town marshal, but not one he wanted to pick up. Quick with his guns in his fists, boasting that he had killed seven men, Mort's reputation was merely a dark smudge on the ground when compared to Smoke's giant shadow. Marshal nodded. Outside. Smoke saw him turn and rush swiftly up the street.
All right, boys. You all know Smoke Jensen. Make your play.
It was over in an instant. Smoke's gun had belched fire and smoke, taking out one outlaw before he even cleared leather. The other was fast enough to have just barely managed to bring his gun up before he was struck down. York's guns had roared and bucked and slammed Natick against the rear wall of the saloon. Down, but not quite dead.
Natick?
What do you want, Jensen?
I know why you broke with Davison and the others.
Yeah? Why?
Because you may be a lot of bad things, but you're no baby killer.
Yeah. I couldn't go along with that. Pull my boots off for me, Jensen.
Smoke tugged off the man's boots. One big toe was sucking through a hole in his sock.
Ain't that pitiful? I stole thousands and thousands of dollars and can't even afford to buy a pair of socks. Rex and Daggett's got some bad ones with them, Jensen. Lapeer, Moore, the Hog, Tustin, Shorty, Red, and Jake. I don't know where they're hiding, Jensen, and that's the truth. But Davidson plans on raping your woman and killing your kid.
Smoke waited for more from the man, but the outlaw wasn't going to say anything else. He was dead. Smoke dug in his own pocket and handed some money to a man standing close by.
Somebody see that he gets a proper burial.
John Reynolds and his sons and daughters and their families looked at the pictures John had sent in from New York. Looked at him in horror. Bodies were sprawling in the street, on the boardwalks, hanging half in and half out of the broken windows. One was face down in a horse trough. Another was sprawled and stiff in death beside the watering trough. and John's son-in-law, Smoke Jensen, handsome devil that he was standing on the boardwalk, calmly rolling a cigarette.
Look, that's my Smoke.
Smoke was wearing his gun's cross-draw, and he had another one tucked behind his gun belt. In another picture, the long-bladed bowie knife he carried behind one gun could be clearly seen. In still another picture, Smoke was sitting on the edge of the boardwalk eating an apple. In the left side of the picture, bodies could be seen hanging from the gallows.
I feel queasy.
Oh, give him here. There's a bandage on Smoke's head, but I can't see that he was shot anywhere else.
Walter's sister-in-law leaned in to look at the photos.
Who is that handsome man standing beside him? He's so rugged-looking.
Lord, Martha, he's savage-looking.
He's some sort of law enforcement officer, but his badge is somewhat different from, Smoke's. Excuse my hesitation, sister, but I never heard of a man being called Smoke.
Get used to it, Jordan.
Sally was feeling just a tad testy. After being in the West, with its mostly honest and open and non-pompous people, the East was beginning to grate on her nerves more and more. Her father picked up on it.
Sally, dearest, it'll soon be 1881. No one carries a gun around here except the law officers, and many times they don't even carry a gun, only a club. There hasn't been an Indian attack in this area in anyone's memory. We are a quiet community with plans underway to have a college here, a branch of the state university. We are a community of laws, darling. We don't have gunfights in the streets. Keene was settled almost 150 years ago.
Yes, Father, I know. 1736, as a matter of fact. It's a nice, quiet, stable, pleasant little community. But I've grown away from it. Father, Mother, all of you, have you ever stood on the Great Divide? Have you ever ridden up in the High Lonesome, where you knew you could look for 100 miles and there would be no other human beings? Have any of you ever watched eagles soar and play in the skies and knew yours were the only eyes on them? No, no, you haven't, none of you. You don't even have a loaded gun in this house. None of you women would know what to do if you were attacked. You haven't any idea how to fire a gun. All you ladies know how to do is sit around looking pretty and attend your goddamn teas.
John Reynolds wore a pained expression on his face. Abigail started fanning herself furiously. Sally's brothers were frowning. Her sisters and sister-in-law looked shocked.
I have my teacher's certificate, Sally. Do you suppose there might be a position for me out where you live?
Martha! You can't be serious. There are savages out there.
Oh, piddly-poo.
Martha would have liked to have had the nerve to say something stronger like Sally, but she didn't want to be marked as a scarlet woman in this circle.
We're looking for a school teacher right at this moment, Martha, and I think you'd be perfect. When Smoke gets here, we'll ask him. If he says you're the choice, then you can start packing.
So Smoke is a one-man committee on the hiring of teachers?
Would you want to buck him on anything, brother?
Jordan Reynolds stroked his beard and remained silent. Unusually silent for a lawyer. Smoke and York left Leadville the next morning, riding out just at dawn. They rode north, past Fremont Pass, then cut east toward Breckenridge. They found no sign of Davidson or Daggett or any of the others with them. They rode on, with Bald Mountain to the south of them, following old trails. They kept Mount Evans to their north and gradually began the winding down toward the town of Denver.
We gonna spend time in Denver City?
A few days, maybe a week. We both need to get groomed and curried and bathed. And our clothes are kind of shabby looking.
Yeah, my jeans are so thin my drawers are showing. If we going east, I reckon we're gonna have to get all dudeed up like dandies, huh?
No way. I'm tired of pretending to be something I'm not. We'll just dress like what we are, Westerners.
Whew, that's a relief. I just can't see myself in one of them goofy caps like you wore back in Dead River.
And while we're here, I've got to send some wires. Find out how Sally is doing and find out what's happened up on the Sugarloaf.
Pretty place you got, Smoke?
Oh, beautiful. And there's room for more. Lots of room. You ever think of getting out of law work, York?
More and more lately. I'd like to have me a little place. Nothing fancy. Nothing so big me and a couple more people couldn't handle it. I just might drift up that way once all this is over.
You got a girl?
Nah, I ain't had the time. Captain's been sending me all over the territory ever since I started with the Rangers. I reckon it's time for me to start thinking about settling down.
You might meet an Eastern girl, York.
Huh? What would I do with her? Them Eastern gals is a different breed of cat. I read about them. All them teas and the like. I gotta have me a woman that'll work right alongside me. You know what ranching is like. Damn hard work.
It is that. But my Sally was born back east. Educated all over the world. She's been to Paris.
Texas?
France.
No kidding. Now, I went to Dallas once. Biggest damn place I ever seen. Too damn many people to suit me. I felt all hemmed in.
It isn't like that up in the high lonesome. I think you'd like it up there, York. We need good people like you. Give it some thought. I'll help you get started, me and Sally.
Right neighborly of y'all. Oh, little trading post up ahead. Let's stop. I'm out of the makings.
While York was buying tobacco, Smoke sat outside, reading a fairly recent edition of a Denver paper. The city was growing by leaps and bounds. The population was now figured at more than 60,000. A new theater had been built, the Tabor Grand Opera House. He read on, suddenly smiling. He checked the date of the paper. It was only 4 days old.
All right, I got all I need. Hey, you grinning like a cat licking cream, Smoke. What's the damn funny?
An old friend of mine is in town, York. And I just bet he'd like to ride east with us.
Yeah? Lawman?
Businessman, scholar, gambler, gunfighter.
Damn, who might that be?
Louis Longmont.
By the Lord Harry. Waiter, two more places here, civil play.
What the hell did he say?
Don't ask me.
If it isn't my dear old friend Smoke Jensen, what an absolute pleasure to see you again.
Same here, Louis. Haven't seen you since...
Since all that fun we had in Fontana, I'd reckon. Oh, I do have to thank you for showing me such a good time back then.
The pleasure was all mine, Louis. This here is Buddy York, Arizona Ranger. He's been riding with me since Dead River.
Pleasure to meet you, Ranger York.
You too, Mr. Lewis. Just York is fine.
Well, York, I take it you saw your fair share of action in Dead River. The way the papers tell it, Smoke took out half the village by himself.
Yeah, they do that. York probably got more men than I did that night.
Well, that is certainly more than enough reason to celebrate. Sit down, both of you. Waiter, a round of Glenlivet for the table. And have the chef cook up something nice for these two gentlemen. Tell them they're friends of Louis Longmont.
York noticed that all their liquor glasses had funny-looking square bits of ice in them, which did make the drink a little bit easier on the tongue.
I've been reading about the exploits of you men.
We've been busy.
Still pursuing the thugs?
You know we are, Louis. You wouldn't have allowed your name to appear in the paper if you hadn't wanted us to find you in Denver.
York sat silent, a bit uncomfortable with the sparkling white tablecloth and all the heavy silverware. He couldn't figure out what the hell he was supposed to do. I mean, after all, he couldn't eat with but one fork and one knife anyway. And he had never seen so many duded-up men and gussied-up women in all his life. Even with new clothes on, it made a common fellow feel shabby.
Let's just say, I'm a bit bored with it all.
You've been traveling about?
Just returned from Paris a month ago. I'd like to get back out in the country, eat some beans and beef, and see the stars above me when I close my eyes.
Want to throw in with us, Louis?
I thought you were never going to ask.
Smoke and York loafed around Denver for a few days while Louis wrapped up his business, and Smoke sent and received several wires.
Well, how's the baby coming along, Smoke?
Both Sally and the baby are fine. Doing 2 months, approximately.
What does she mean by that?
It means, young man, that babies do not always cooperate with a timetable. A child might be born within several weeks of that date, before it or after it.
Louis was dressed in boots, dark pants, gray shirt, and black leather vest. He wore two guns, both tied down and both well used and well taken care of. The wooden butts worn smooth with use. York knew that Louis Longmont, self-made millionaire and world-famous gambler, was a deadly gunslinger. And a damn good man to have walking with you when trouble stuck its head up. Especially when that trouble had a six-gun in each hand.
What's the plan, Smoke?
You about ready to pull out?
Is tomorrow morning agreeable with you?
Fine. The sooner the better. I thought we'd take our time, right across Kansas. Maybe as far as St. Louis, if time permits. We can catch a train anywhere along the way, and by riding, we just might pick up some information about Davidson and his crew.
Sounds good. Damn a man who would even entertain the thought of harming a child.
We'll pull out at dawn.
Sally had not shown her family all the wires she'd received from Smoke. She did not wish to alarm any of them. And above all, she didn't wish to alert the local police as to her husband's suspicions about Davidson and his gang traveling east after her and her baby. Her father would have things done the legal way, ponderous and, unknown to him, very dangerous for all concerned. John Reynolds had absolutely no idea what kind of man this Rex Davidson was. But Sally did. And Smoke could handle it his way. And she was glad Lewis and York were with him. And York just might be the ticket for Martha out of the East and into the still wild and wide-open West. After all, he was a good-looking young man. They pulled out at first light. Three men who wore their guns as a part of their beat. Three men who had faced death and beaten it so many times, none of them could even remember all the battles. Lewis had chosen a big buckskin-colored horse with a mean look to his eyes. The horse looked just about as mean as Smoke knew Drifter really was. Before leaving Denver, Smoke had wired Jim Wilde and asked for both York and Lewis to be formally deputized as U.S. Marshals. The request had been honored within the day. So they were three men who now wore official badges on their chests. One, a millionaire adventurer. One, a successful rancher. One, a young man who was only weeks away from meeting the love of his life. They rode east, veering slightly south, these three hard-eyed, heavily armed men. They would continue a southerly line until reaching a trading post on the banks of the Big Sandy. At the trading post, they would cut due east and hold to that all the way across Kansas. They would stay south of Hell Creek, but on their ride across Colorado, they would ford Sand Creek, an offshoot of the Republican River. They would ride across Spring Creek, Landsman, East Spring, and cross yet another Sand Creek before entering into Kansas. Kansas was still woolly, but nothing like it had been a few years back. Great cattle herds were being driven up from Texas, and outlaws and gunfighters were just about anywhere one wished to look. But the three men still rode with caution. The decade had rolled into the 80s. There were still bands of Indians who left the reservation from time to time. Still bands of outlaws that killed and robbed. And they were riding into an area of the country where men still killed other men over the bitterness of that recent unpleasantness called by some the Civil War, and by others, the war between the states. The days were warm and pleasant, or hot and unpleasant, as the men rode steadily eastward across the plains. But the plains were now being dotted and marred and scarred with wire. Wire put up by farmers to keep ranchers' cattle out. Wire put up by ranchers to keep nesters out of water holes, creeks, and rivers. Ranchers who wished to breed better cattle put up wire to keep inferior breeds from mixing in and to keep the prized bulls at home. But none of the men really liked wire, even though all could see the reasons behind erecting the barbed wire fences. Well, could see the reasons most of the time. They didn't seek out others as they rode toward the east and faraway New Hampshire. Every third or fourth day, late in the afternoon, if a town was handy, they would check into a hotel and seek out a shave and a bath. If not, they would bathe in a handy stream and go unshaven until a town dotted the vast prairie.
Ever been to this New Hampshire, Lewis?
Never have, my friend. But it is an old and very settled state. One of the original 13 to ratify the Constitution. The first settlement, I can't recall the name, was back in 1623. But I can assure you both, if we ride in like this, armed to the teeth and looking like buccaneers on horseback, we are gonna raise some eyebrows.
How's that? We don't look no different than anybody else.
Ah, but my young friend, we are much different from the folks you're about to meet in a few weeks. Their streets are well lighted with gas lamps. A few might even have telephones. Marvelous devices. The towns you will see will be old and settled towns. No one carries a gun of any type. Many villages and towns have long banned their public display, except for officers of the law. And thank you, Smoke, for commissioning us. This way, we can carry firearms openly. New York, the world you are only days away from viewing is one that you have never seen before. Smoke, my suggestion would be that we ride the trains well into Massachusetts and then head north on horseback from our jumping-off place. I would suggest Springfield. And get ready for some very strange looks, gentlemen.
I'm beginning not to like these folks, and I ain't even met none of them yet. Don't tote no gun. What do they do if somebody tries to mess with them?
They are civilized people. They let the law take care of it.
Do tell. In other words, they ain't got the sand to fight their own fights?
That's one way of putting it, York. My, but this is gonna be a stimulating and informative journey.
Smoke.
Yeah?
What the hell's a telephone?
I've got their latest wire. They're in Salina. Smoke, York, and Louis Longmont.
The millionaire? Mr. Longmont is coming east by horseback?
Sally looked at her father. She loved him dearly, but sometimes he could be one pompous ass.
Father, Louis is an adventurer. He is also one of the most famous gunfighters in all the West. He's killed a dozen men on the continent, in duels, with sword and pistol. He's killed, oh, I don't know, 20 or 30 or maybe 50 men out west with guns. He's a gentleman, so refined. I'll be glad to see him again.
Good Lord. In one breath, you speak of Louis Longmont killing 50 men. In the next breath, you tell me he's so refined. What kind of goddamn people are going to be staying in my house?
Father, where on earth did you pick up such language?
Well, how's the wife doing?
Telegraph says she's feeling fine. Baby's not due for another month.
Then we keep riding?
Well, St. Louis isn't far from Kansas City. Figure we'll just ride there and catch the train then.
I like that idea. No use stopping riding before we have to.
The trio rode for several days on their way to St. Louis. The night before they were due to arrive in the city, they set up camp near a creek and cooked up some steaks for dinner. Louis lay on his blankets and watched Smoke unroll a war bag from the pack animal. He smiled when he saw what his friend was unpacking, a buckskin jacket, one that had been bleached to gray-white and trimmed ornately by a squaw.
You have a touch of the theatrical in you, my friend.
I got to thinking we might as well give the folks a show. I had it stored in Denver.
Gonna be interesting.
Louis poured another cup of coffee and turned the venison steaks. York returned from his bath in the creek, his trousers on but shirtless. For the first time, Smoke and Louis noticed the old bullet scars that pocked the young man's hide.
You picked up a few here and there?
Yeah, me and another ranger, named McCoy, got all tangled up with some bad ones down in the Dos Cabezas Mountains. I hadn't been with the rangers long when it happened. McCoy got hit so bad, he had to retire from the business. Started him up a little general store up near Prescott, but we buried them old boys where they fell. I was laid up for near about a month. Another time, I was tracking a bank robber up near Carson Mesa. He ambushed me, got lead in me, but I managed to stay in the saddle and rode up into Utah after him. I nailed him up near Vermilion Cliffs, picked up a few other scratches here and there.
It was then that Louis found out what Smoke had already learned. York was a man to ride the river with. There was no backup in that Arizona Ranger.
Here you are, Mr. Jensen, sir. Telegraph for you.
Thanks.
What? Smoke, what's wrong?
Sally was taken to the hospital the day after the wire from Kansas City.
Oh, no. Did they attack? Is she fine?
No attack. Sally and the babies are doing fine.
Babies?
Babies.
More than one?
More than one.
I figure we'd best catch that train now, right, Smoke? Smoke?
Oh,
Yeah. Let's get to Keene right quick.
They arranged bookings for their horses and themselves and chugged out of St. Louis the next morning. It was the first time Smoke or York had ever seen a sleeping car, and both were amazed at the luxury of the dining cars and at the quality of the food that they were served. They stopped in Ohio, and the three got off to change trains. It was an overnighter, so they could exercise their horses, get their ground legs back, and take a genuine bath in a proper tub. All were getting just a bit gamey. The three big men, broad-shouldered and lean-hipped, with their boots and spurs and western hats, twin six-shooters tied down low, drew many an anxious look from a lot of men and more than curious looks from a lot of ladies. The three stood on the shores of Lake Erie and marveled at the sight of it, then stomped and jingled back to their fancy hotel. A platoon of cops were waiting for them when they arrived. The captain approached them, caution in his eyes and his step.
Lads, I can see you're U.S. Marshals, but are you after someone in our city?
No, but neither have we bothered anyone here.
Smoke looked at the mass of cops and smiled.
Kind of reminds me of that time I took on about 25 guns at that silver camp.
You fought 25 desperados all by yourself?
Yep.
How did that turn out?
I killed them all.
You killed them all?
Yep.
Several news reporters and one photographer had gathered around, because real cowboys and western gunslingers were rare in Cleveland.
Might I ask your name, sir?
Smoke Jensen.
Smoke? Jesus, Mary and Joseph!
Smoke, Lewis, and York were given the keys to the city. All three answered an almost endless barrage of questions and endured dozens of cameras. A hasty parade was called, and the men rode up and down the city streets in an open carriage.
Goddamnedest thing I ever heard of! What the hell have we done to deserve something this grand?
You're an Arizona Ranger, York, and a gunfighter, just like Smoke and myself.
If you say so. Seems like a whole bunch to do about nothing, if you ask me.
Shakespeare felt the same way.
No kidding! Seems to me I heard of him. Ain't he from down around El Paso?
Lewis waved goodbye to a dark-haired young woman who smiled and blushed as the train moved out of the station.
Boys, the freshness and vitality of youth never ceases to amaze me.
I noticed you left the party very early last night, Lewis. She certainly is lovely.
Lewis just smiled.